As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Go ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Live. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning on a very cold morning here in Toronto. It is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Jeff Salmon, and joining us for the show this week, features editor of Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca, Garrett Joyce, still recovering from the cold outside.
I'll be thawed out by the second hour.
And John Gregg, the managing editor of Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca. John, appreciate your coming in as well. We met for the first time yesterday.
It was glorious.
Yeah, and you're one of the coolest people I've met, I got to tell you.
And we didn't even meet outside.
Didn't meet outside. No, not at all. I wouldn't have stopped to talk to you outside. I would have just kept, I don't care who that is. I'm going to keep going. I can't talk to anybody right now. Now, we got a lot to talk about on the show. Later on in the hour, celebrating Canadian gold, but which Canadian NHL teams, have the most to look forward to based on the performances that we saw. We're going to talk about that later on in the hour. Next hour, the Toronto Raptors, the four-game losing streak. What next? What do you do now? Is it enough that DeMar DeRozan is coming back? We'll touch on the NFL playoffs and the week that had been as far as Cooperstown is concerned with those getting in. And one that didn't, we expected him not to get in, but the fashion in which he doesn't get in is something to talk about. We'll talk about a former Blue Jay next hour as well. But of course, we talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. As the show is wont to do, you look back at the week that was, and it's never really boring in Toronto Maple Leaf land, but certainly this week was a shining example of that. Guys, Randy Carlyle getting fired. Let's go all the way to the beginning as we come all the way to, or go all the way to, last night's win over the Columbus Blue Jackets, which was just a big sigh of relief for everybody watching the Toronto Maple Leafs and them themselves. But the Randy Carlyle firing, were you surprised, first off, by the timing of it? Because I thought he'd be gone a few months ago or a few months from now, not in January.
I love the timing of it. That's my favorite part of all of this, right? In that it is sort of like the last day of a U.S. presidency, and that's when the president hands out the pardons for to criminals, right? To fire Carlyle just as the World Juniors expire and the end of this Leaf road trip from hell. It just smacks of that. It's like, you know what? There's this loud noise going on, incredible, great feeling about a Canada win at the World Juniors. And, by the way, here's your pink slip, Randy. And, it was just like a complete 180. But
yeah, I think it's like what, the third mid-season firing of a Leafs coach in history. And it comes right at pretty much the halfway mark. It's almost like, Brendan Shanahan was kind of just, and I guess Dave Nonis, that's at least what Shanny will tell you, we're just kind of waiting to see what they have for 40 games, and now they want to see what they can do, what the players can do when Randy Carlyle isn't there for the next 40 games, and then start the teardown, hopefully, right?
Hopefully in some people's eyes, including yourself.
Yeah.
But, from a lot of people that I've talked to and callers I've talked to that have called into the radio station, to the network, a lot of them believing still in the core that is the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, a lot of them, not saying the majority, but there are some that are saying, Kessel's a great player and Phaneuf he's fine. Like, they just got to build around these guys, not necessarily tear things down.
Well, I think when your best player is a winger who doesn't want to play defense, doesn't drive possession, won't even drive to the net, let alone possession, I think you're in big trouble. I mean, you know, probably the closest guy to him in the league is Patrick Kane. And you know, they both get paid to score goals and put up points. But Patrick Kane is not the best player on his team by a long shot and doesn't need to be. Whereas the Leafs need Kessel to be a leader on the ice and off. And I don't get the feeling that he is off, and he's certainly not on.
Well, and Patrick Kane rises to occasions in a way that Kessel's never shown us that.
Yeah.
Right.
But has Kane been given more of the opportunity based on the team he's with?
You know what? Kessel had a great opportunity in Game 7 against Boston, right, in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and was he the best player on the ice? Not in a way that Kane ends up as the best player on the ice in if not for the entire games, at the most important junctures of important games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah, I think that Kessel is sort of a starter kit for Patrick Kane, but not the real model.
Mm. Yeah, and I mean, I'm not putting all this on Kessel. I mean, no. He's paid to score goals and rack up points. He's not paid to be a back checker, but when the whole team is crumbling around you and the defensive capabilities of the entire team are, you know, frankly brutal, I mean, you've got to be the one to step up and skate hard for, you know, the 18, 19, 20 minutes that you're on the ice, including things like skating hard to the bench on a change. You know, I mean, everything. You're setting the tone for your team. And, you know, he hasn't set the best tone.
It was nice to see the Toronto Maple Leafs respond yesterday when Brendan Shanahan, speaking with the media, but maybe more important to them, speaking to them. They responded last night in a 5-2 win against the Columbus Blue Jackets. But in Winnipeg, seeing the effort that they put forth with their head coach on the hot seat, with their president in attendance there, with Brendan Shanahan there. And we're not talking, oh, he made the trip out to Tampa or to Florida to enjoy some of the warm weather out in California. No, he went to Winnipeg to watch the team. So you know a sacrifice was made there.
I think it's colder here than it is there right now. But
all right, fine. It's still Winnipeg, and there's lots to do here in Toronto. No offense, Winnipeg. No offense. Okay, so Shanahan goes out there, and with all the circumstances that come around this club at that time and how the Leafs needed to play better on Saturday night in Winnipeg against a team that was injured, battered and bruised, their top four defensemen with the Winnipeg Jets were out. Evander Kane was out as well. And the Leafs give out a flat effort and lose that hockey game and ultimately cost Randy Carlyle his job. And then after the coaching change, they take on the Washington Capitals Wednesday, and they come out with a very flat effort. They were very poor and weren't feeling good going into the game. And they lost that game. A good effort last night. I'll tell you, I was relieved to see the effort that was last night because they're listening. They can actually hear. Their ears are working. They're responding. They responded, and there was a couple of times where they didn't, and last night they did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to read too much into the small windows. It's funny. I talked to a couple of NHLers and another ex-NHLer this week. And the consensus among the small group was this team still makes the playoffs, right? You can't.
It's tough to not make the playoffs in the East.
It is tough. It is tough. And if you're talking about beating out Florida for a spot, I think they should do it. I mean, just based on the talent at hand. I think that players see the game differently than fans do. And players are sort of skills junkies and ability junkies rather than looking at how things fit all together, right? And so I can get how the players might be biased a certain way and say, look, this guy is that good and this guy is that good. Those two that goods together add up to this, and that should make the playoffs. So, I mean, I don't know that they look at cohesion and chemistry or you know, team play as much as individual talent. The individual talent is there to make the playoffs with this team. I don't think it's a problem with talent. You know, if they were missing the message with Carlyle, maybe they'll, you know, and they don't get it now, boy, then the teardown starts right there rather than a rebuild.
Yeah, and I mean, when you talk about, you know, small samples or whatever, I mean, let's not forget who the Columbus Blue Jackets are. Yes, they're a team that has dealt with its fair share or even unfair share of injuries this year, but, I mean, they're below the Leafs in the standings in the East. They're not a playoff team. I mean, you can, sure, you went out and dominated them and held them to 24 shots or whatever, but it's the Columbus Blue Jackets, right? I mean, you can't get too excited about that. I think losing to Winnipeg, losing to Washington is more indicative of the way the Leafs have played and, you know, unless things change big time, very likely will play than last night's game against Columbus.
Let's get back to Phil Kessel a little bit here because he's taken, unfairly or not, he's gotten a lot of heat this week. And I think as a member of a core of a team that just fired their head coach that's struggling, you're going to get some of that heat. But I think he brought a lot of it onto himself with responding to a reporter in the way that he did, calling him an idiot. And there would be a lot of people that would sympathize with Phil Kessel that would come to his defense, and I've certainly talked to them this week. And I get that, but just from a perspective of doing himself a favor, Phil Kessel has to know better than that. He's just going to bring a lot of heat onto himself. And he didn't respond in a good way on the ice in the next game, which would have been the first game that Horacek coached post Randy Carlyle in a loss to the Washington Capitals. He was brutal in the first period, as far as I'm concerned. Some of the number crunchers might say otherwise. But he was asked about his role in Carlyle being fired, in that a member of the Leafs organization in the past saying that he was uncoachable. He didn't like that. He didn't respond too well to that. Now, fair or foul, as far as the question is concerned, I think he's irrelevant when it's a star player like this. He's got to know better than that, just for himself, for his own reasons. And I get why he would lash out. I totally understand it. But for his own purposes, to relieve some of the heat that he's going to get and his hockey club's going to get, he's got to know better and get beyond that.
I disagree. I think it's refreshing to see Phil Kessel say something emotional, to show some chutzpah. I mean, you know, the question, you know, by all means, you ask the question, and I think it was a fair question. You know, Dave Festchuk has called him out in the past in print, you know, I think Phil knows that and reacted to the guy who calls him out regularly and came back with a fair answer. I mean, what's wrong with being honest when you're a hockey player? Too often we get, you know, pucks in deep, 110% type answers, and you know, I thought it was great to see some actual emotion from the Leafs' best player.
Yeah, I don't know about calling a reporter an idiot and walking away that he did. I mean, to me, that bespeaks an immaturity. You know, I took a lot of flack when I wrote about Phil Kessel in my book about the Columbus Blue Jackets scouting department, Future Greats and Heartbreaks. I sat in on Kessel's interview at the combine, and you know what, Phil Kessel back then, I Boston fans threw darts at me, you know, after they drafted him for running down Phil Kessel. Phil Kessel in that combine interview was the most immature kid of anyone who walked in that door, and it, you know, he was 18 going on 12 years old. Right now I'd say he's, you know, is he 28 going on 14 years old. I don't think he's really changed that much. You know, and I get that emotion is great to see and great to hear. You know, he could be emotional and be accountable and be responsible and say, you know what, I played a major role in his getting fired, and you know, it tears me up. That's emotional. Right. To deflect any blame or fault. It's not realistic. It's certainly not mature. And on top of everything else, it's something that you could accept in a minor player in the grand scheme of things. But he's a centerpiece, you know, like he is a face of your franchise.
But Gary, I'll take emotion even misguided emotion over nothing. And we usually get nothing out of Phil, right? I mean,
well, but you know, I don't think Kessel could absorb this kind of heat or this kind of pressure. I don't. I think he's someone, and it's not an insult to him. I just think he's a person, a player that needs to be insulated and to have others answer this kind of line of questioning and have this kind of heat. I don't think he does himself a favor by bringing this on, because I don't think he has the type of personality to be able to withstand that sort of thing. And I think we saw that in the game in Washington, where he was
that
terrible.
That was his worst game of the season. Yeah, I mean, he was a turnover machine.
You could tell this week affected him in that game. And then he needed a couple of days to get away from it, for Peter Horacek to get a hold of him, to calm him down a little bit, and to get his game back. And he got his game back a lot more last night. So I appreciate the emotion, but I don't think he's someone that can ask for this kind of heat and be able to respond.
I think you're mistaking you're mistaking petulance for emotion.
Well, possibly, yeah, okay.
You know, he acted out. I don't know that acting out is really appropriate for an athlete in his position. I think it was a really fair and honest question. Even without the prompt,
definitely
being,
takes balls to ask that question, right?
I mean, absolutely.
You know, for him to stand there and just say it and repeat it.
It was prompted by Ron Wilson going out there and saying that Kessel was uncoachable, right? I mean, there was good reason to ask it. There was foundation for it. In fact, all Dave Festchuk was doing was offering Phil Kessel equal time. He was being completely fair to Kessel in asking that question. It wasn't that it was an unfair question. It was fair to Kessel, and he didn't accept it as an opportunity to put himself on the record.
That's Gare Joyce with John Gregg at Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Jeff Sammet on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Now let's talk about Ron Wilson. The motive behind his comments, do you think that's just someone that's being brutally honest? Is he doing himself any favors for his own coaching career? Where is Ron Wilson coming from here?
I think all that says is that the confidentiality agreement has expired, right? That's Ron Wilson talking for the benefit of Ron Wilson, to hear his own voice. That's who Ron Wilson is. I mean, to come in out of the hills after the battle to shoot the wounded, that's him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's great entertainment value. I mean, but you got to take it with a grain of salt. I mean, he is a guy who got fired, who got replaced. I mean, but you can also say that he is speaking for himself, like you said, Garrett, but he's also reinforcing what other people have said, right? This core group is not one you're going to win with. They are complementary players. In many cases, they are Kastos, Kessel, Phaneuf, etc. I mean, you need to start getting some of those guys out the door, getting some new players in here, and offering the fans some hope, because perpetual mediocrity is nothing to hope for. Youth, new faces, new people standing up in the room and being accountable, like you said, Gary. I mean, that's what you can offer this fan base right now. And I think Brendan Shanahan has 40 games to figure out which guys are going to stay and which guys are going to go.
It was absolutely Shanahan's best moment at that press conference.
What, yesterday?
Yeah, when he talked about Wilson. I just ate that up. I mean, Ron Wilson proved himself to be a very small guy, and Shanahan was bigger than Wilson in that moment. And Dave Festchuk asking Kessel about Ron Wilson's quote was an opportunity for Kessel to be bigger than Ron Wilson. It's not hard, but Kessel didn't accept it.
What did you guys walk away with Shanahan's newsier yesterday? I think he outlined why the coach is gone, why Carlisle was gone. He talked about the week that was, but the players could be next. That a close eye is being put on them if things don't improve. It's only the fourth time he's spoken to the media since being hired, but that's what I walked away with yesterday, that the players are on notice. It was a bit of a warning shot.
Yeah, I don't know how you can't be on notice when your team kind of sucks and your coach just got fired. Like I said earlier, this is a 40-game tryout for everybody on this roster, and they should feel some pressure, and they should feel accountability coming down from the executive suites. I mean, you may not be here next year if they can get rid of your contract, which is another problem altogether, obviously, with some of these ones. But yeah, I mean, you know, Shanny speaking, I don't think he said anything revelatory. I think he just, you know, basically came out and said something because everybody was wondering where he was.
Yeah. I expected Shanahan to stay in the background a good long time. And I don't know that this press conference that he had on Friday is sort of a rollout for a higher profile, more frequent presence, you know, this season. I think that this was going to be a season where he watched and waited and was going to give everyone an absolutely full opportunity. You know, you can say, is half a season an opportunity for Randy Carlyle? You know what? It's a pretty fair window considering
100%.
You know, he's had the team, you know, seasons, not just half a season. You know, and he's giving the players that window as well. I think he has been around the league, working in the league offices. You know, he's watched a lot of hockey, and he's watched a lot of Leaf hockey, but it would represent 1/30th of the viewing that he's had over the past 4 or 5 seasons. He's giving everyone a fair chance. On top of everything else, I think he's been giving Dave Nonis as much chance as he can get as well.
Has he?
Reestablishing him.
Yeah, but I agree. You're right. He has given him a fair chance. In my mind, Dave Nonis hasn't done a single thing this year to stop the bleeding, though.
No.
I mean, don't we have the exact same roster we had on October 1st, minus some call-ups? And
well, I mean, isn't a large chunk of this year already dedicated to finding out what the identity of this club is? And not only you doing it, your own club doing it, but every other club doing it as well?
But, Jeff, we knew what the identity was, and it didn't change in the first 10 games or when they were going 10-1-1 or when they went 3-7.
Well, I mean, did you know what the Leafs' identity was, or did you think they knew what the Leafs' identity was given that they were so hot and cold, so up and down?
I think it was the same identity they had last year and the year before. I mean, it's the same players, right? You could try and catch lightning in a bottle with million-dollar signings in the offseason of guys like Santorelli and Winnick or whatever, but
the only turnover is the bottom third of the roster.
Yeah, I mean, the core is the same, has been, and, you know, will be for the foreseeable future unless some big changes happen. So to say that you needed, you know, 40 games to find out what this team was, I don't think you did.
I think 40 games for Brendan Shanahan to find out who this team was.
Yeah,
right?
Yep, exactly.
Not Dave Nonis.
Mm. No, and that's why it comes in the middle of the season. I firmly believe that he set a mark for himself. Give me half a season to see what we got, and then we're going to start making some moves.
In terms of Shanahan being up front with everybody, or at least just showing himself with more regularity, I was doing the Jeff Blair show this past week on Sportsnet 590, The Fan here in Toronto, and the producer is Travis McKenzie, and he just kind of said off the cuff to me, which I thought was pretty funny. He said, you know, it's funny, we saw so much of Brendan Shanahan in his role with the NHL because of all those videos that would be released explaining the suspensions and fines, what have you. And now that he's the president of the Toronto Maple Leafs, I don't see him or hear from him. It's funny how that happens. Do you guys want to see more of Brendan Shanahan? Do you moving forward? Can understand why you might see less of him because he's kind of stepping into the background and assessing this club. But do you feel that you need and want to see more of Brendan Shanahan moving forward in his role with the Leafs?
No. I mean, he's the president of the team. I want to see the GM. I want to see the coach.
Me too.
I want to see the players. I want Shanny to make the right moves, but I don't need to see him up in front of the mic.
Much is Ken Holland?
Exactly,
right? Like, I don't even know that the GM is who you want out there every day. Forget about the team president.
No, but I mean, if roster moves are made, you want the GM to come out and say, this is why we did it, and we're happy to have done it, and thanks for your service, and we can't wait for the new guy. You don't need the president to be doing that. And, you know, really, it's like you said, Garrett, it's the coach and the players. That's who you want to see. They're on the ice.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that or suggesting that people would want Shanahan to be the face of the franchise, but to hear him speak a little bit more. I don't necessarily, because I think good executives, good presidents put people in place to do that for them. And Dave Nonis would be a guy that, in theory, would be the one that does all the, you know, the explaining. Like, because when Dave Nonis spoke with the media on Tuesday when the firing came down, you know, I had a lot of people ask me off air and off saying, well, it's just Dave Nonis versus Brendan Shanahan. Well, it might be a group decision. It might ultimately be Brendan Shanahan for all we know. But Dave Donis is the GM. He's the guy one up from Randy Carlyle. He should be the one that's explaining all this. That's his job.
Exactly. I mean,
I don't see that Shanahan should have to come out if there's a move made between now and the trading deadline. And we're not going to see him. Like, we'll hear from Donis, right? I think for the firing of a coach, that sort of rises to the level that, okay, he can come out and talk if there's any sort of heat. You know, where's Brendan Shanahan? Those stories have been out there already this year. You know, I think it would just cut Nonis's legs out from under him. It would be like a huge distraction for the team. And it would make Shanahan out to look like an ego junkie or something like that. He's tried to establish after this narrative was out there that he's the de facto GM. He's tried to erase that and draw that down.
Well, he's been doing that since day one, right? I mean, he hasn't been
that narrative won't go away though.
No, it won't. Of course it won't. But I mean, you're right. He's done everything he can to be in the shadows, to be in the background, to be, you know, pulling whatever strings he's pulling, but to leave Dave Nonis out there so that Dave Nonis has the authority to speak to everybody, right? And to make moves.
Hmm. The word rebuild has come up in our conversation so far, and I want to touch on that from a fan's perspective. Guys, do you think that fans would be patient enough for an all-out rebuild if it came to that?
I'm older than I look, right? I don't know that I can wait that long. No, I don't know. I've always said that Toronto fans would be patient enough. And going back to talking to Cliff Fletcher about it, and he insists, nope, you know, back in the 90s, the Toronto fans would never sit still.
He said that back then?
Back then, yeah. Oh, absolutely. That was 94. I remember.
Yeah, and I don't think Maple Leafs fans are ever patient. I mean, it's been nearly 50 years of losing, right? I mean, everybody's sick of it. You know, it also burns up the airwaves. It burns up the TV stations. It gets clicks on the website. I mean, anything Maple Leaf, anytime there's a change, you know, the fans are going crazy. And it's like I said earlier, a rebuild is selling hope. Not doing anything is selling what we got. And nobody's down with what we have. I mean, why not tear it down? Why not see what you can get when you put, you know, Phaneuf and Kessel and Bozak and even JVR, like all of them, Gardner, everybody, what can you get for these guys? What will the market bear? Can you even move those contracts and just see what's out there? I mean,
Burke got us into this jackpot.
Yep.
Because he believed that Toronto fans wouldn't be patient for a rebuild. Like he tried to accelerate the process coming in, making the Kessel trade. That, you know, that is the first domino to fall. And it was pushed in the direction by a guy who believed that the market wasn't patient enough for a rebuild.
Yeah, and I mean, even the Phaneuf trade, I mean, at the time, although he was already trending down, it looked like basically you got a pretty good defenseman for a bag of pucks, right? But, you know, maybe you're better off not having that guy and really actually bottoming out. Because where would they be now if they had the picks they could have had if they had actually bottomed out and not moved them away?
I mean, to me, the question goes in the wrong direction. Is this market patient enough for a rebuild? Whether it's patient enough or not, it's necessary,
yeah,
right?
Aren't like, we rebuilding right now?
You know, like, it's bad medicine. You have to take it, right? Like, it might alienate people. It might, you know, make their day bad, whatever. You know what? It's reality. You have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that's made the playoffs once in the past decade, and that was during a shortened season. So how can you say that will the fans be patient for a rebuild when really we are rebuilding, aren't we? I mean, yeah, there's some nice pieces in there, I guess, but you still need the number one center. You still need the number one D. You still need better depth. I mean, the whole decade has been about rebuilding.
Well, I guess
Just not this overt rebuilding, not Edmonton Oilers rebuilding, not, you know.
Well, this retooling, rebuilding, quote unquote, that we're going through now are under tight restrictions given the money that has already been delved out to a number of players.
Yeah, you
got to
move those contracts.
So
you got to find some flexibility,
makes it different.
Right?
Yeah,
you need to find flexibility.
We've been caught in renovations, not rebuilding.
Ah, yeah,
there you go.
Very good.
Where's Mike Holmes?
Hockey Nation with Gord Stellick and Brad May at 5 o'clock. On Sportsnet 590, the Fan here in Toronto. Odd that this is not a Leafs game day, given it is a Saturday, but they won last night 5-2 over the Columbus Blue Jackets. A very good effort by them. Next up, for the Toronto Maple Leafs to take on the Kings Monday in LA at 10 o'clock pregame on Sportsnet 590, the Fan here in Toronto. That's going to be a big road trip.
They are in tough on this road trip.
Well, I'll tell you, 16 of the next 23 games.
That's the hardest trip in hockey right now.
16 of the next 23 games are going to be on the road, so this is going to be a tough test for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Death Valley.
Yeah, it could be for someone or someones. We'll see what happens. Canadian Gold this past Monday, thanks to our juniors, who made the biggest impressions. We'll discuss ahead on Sportsnet Magazine Live with Garrett Joyce and John Gregg. I'm Jeff Sambut on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The CHL Podcast with Jeff Merrick and Sam Cosentino.
You're trying to feed the guns, you know. I'm not sure if they're pop guns or Uzis.
I'm trying to figure out, in my mind, I know they're different types of skaters, but is he just flat out a faster skater than Nathan MacKinnon was in Halifax?
I guess we didn't play very well, or at least I didn't. And the season seat holder didn't recognize me and said something like, well, that wasn't a bad game last night, but boy, did Rudy ever stink.
He's a wonderful, wonderful player that never really gets the credit.
Here's our podcast pledge to you, gentle listeners. Sam and I will be sober on that day. How about that? That's our pledge to you.
Yeah, I'm glad you made it.
From now until the MasterCard Memorial Cup, this is the destination for news, opinion, and prospects. Find this and more on Sportsnet.ca. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live with Garrett Joyce, the features editor of Sportsnet Magazine, John Gregg, the managing editor of Sportsnet Magazine, both as well of Sportsnet.ca. I'm Jeff Sammet. It is the Sportsnet Radio Network. Next hour, we'll touch on the Raptors, NFL, and Cooperstown. We talk about Canadian Gold right now, guys, and we saw the juniors bring that on Monday. And as we look at right now at those that were involved and those that received the gold, we wonder which NHL teams really had their eyes on some of those involved that have the most reason to be excited. Gare, which of those Canadian NHL teams are the most excited right now based on their prospects' performances at the WJC?
Well, if you're projecting it all forward, you know, you can say Edmonton would be, because they're in line to get McDavid or Eichel, you know, based on sort of luck of the draw and continued free fall. Edmonton also would be really encouraged by the performance of Darnell Nurse. He looks like a top two defenseman. He was Canada's best. He freelanced a little bit, but then again, when you're playing Denmark and Slovakia in quarters and semis, you know, the field has parted in front of you like the Red Sea. There has never been a Canadian team that's had a better draw than this one. So maybe the freelancing was tied to that somewhat. But if you're saying that in 2 years' time, we're going to have Darnell Nurse and McDavid or Eichel as cornerstones of our franchise, I think you're doing really well.
Yeah, it feels like this is the one thing, Darnell Nurse being the person, that the Edmonton Oilers have not screwed up in the past, what, 5 years?
Yeah.
Like, not forcing him into the league when he wasn't ready.
Give him time.
Well, I mean, he looks like he could be ready next year, right? I mean, going back to junior for 2 years, not being on the junior team last year and bouncing back from that. And
it's hard for me to figure out how he didn't make the junior team last year.
Yeah, fair enough. But how did Michael Del Col not make it this year, right? Yeah. I mean, they had, and who was the returning defenseman that they cut? I can't remember off the top of my head. But I mean, he bounced back from that adversity, and it's probably the first time he's had any adversity as a hockey player. And his game has matured. He's more defensively responsible. I mean, you're right, Gary was freelancing somewhat, but in the O, he's not freelancing like he was.
He freelanced effectively.
Yeah,
That was the only only criticism I heard from scouts was, you know what, like the guy could draw it down a notch in terms of jumping up into the rush or you know, actually taking the puck and going and trying to go through like three guys.
Yeah, and in his own end, I mean, he showed that he could take on some bigger guys, that he could play tough D, take the body, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean,
he's got the frame to carry some serious weight and be a big dude at the next level.
Yeah.
Like, there was a lot to like with his game.
I think the biggest answer that we got out of those that we saw was, of course, Connor McDavid, that it was if there was ever any doubt whether or not he's the number one pick in the upcoming NHL draft. I don't think there are many doubters right now.
I don't know how you go away from him. I mean, you know, Jack Eichel's a different, more of a power forward, but I mean, from, you know, speed and you know, hands and just sick skill, I mean, I don't know how you go away from McDavid.
Eichel would have been the first pick if he were eligible last year.
Sure. So same with McDavid, right?
Oh, well,
yeah.
McDavid would be the first pick in any year that doesn't have Crosby in it.
Right. Yep.
And then he's in the conversation.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the goaltenders, can we look at the goaltending we saw and say that we can be as excited in seeing the futures of, let's say, a Roberto Luongo in 99, a Marc-Andre Fleury in 2004, a Carey Price in 2007? Can we anticipate to any kind of a future out of the goaltending we saw out of those that we just mentioned?
Well, as far as Zach Fucale goes, I think that for Canadians fans, I think they could be looking at some exciting hockey, right? but that isn't necessarily what you want. I don't know that it was very hard to get a read on exactly where his game is, given that, you know, he plays one competitive game in the opening round. Then he's got Denmark and Slovakia in the quarters and semis. He played in two meaningful games in this tournament.
He didn't even play against the U.S. though, right?
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like he played against Finland.
Right, right.
You know, and he was good in that game, and he had to be because the Canadians got through that game and it was really dicey in the second period. He was very good there, but a very small window to measure where Fucale's game is. But if you take an even smaller window and you're looking at the second period of the final, right, I don't know that you come away from that, you know, thinking that this guy, you know, he's the heir to Carey Price. I don't know that that's a lock by any stretch.
Yeah, I think the Quebec League playoffs and the Memorial Cup will be a much better barometer of where Zach Fucale is as a goalie. Hmm. Because he hasn't been as good as he was when he was 16 for the past couple of years with Halifax. So, you know, when he gets under the pressure and is playing other good teams instead of just playing one other good team, you know, I think we'll see more from about who he is.
Yeah, and I think that was the huge question going into this tournament, was that Fucale had been so bad in the Quebec League this season that he had opened up what looked like a lockdown spot as the number one for this team.
Peaking at 16, get in line, kid. Some other names, Max Domi, Sam Reinhardt, Curtis Lazar. You know, Domi and Lazar are the two players that stood out the most for me as far as making the biggest impact, that you weren't aware of their games before, you certainly are now. Would you put them, I mean, we talked about Nurse McDavid, we talked about the goaltending, but would you say that Lazar, Domi, would have made the biggest leaps in this tournament?
I don't think so. I mean, Lazar was in the NHL before the tournament, right?
And I think
he's an NHL hockey player. He's back with them now. So.
I don't think you have any illusion about Curtis Lazar being a first-line player.
No, not at all. He's a third-line type guy, right? I mean, he's a defensively responsible energy player who could pot some goals, but not a ton of goals.
Yeah. Domi was, I don't want to say he was a revelation. Like, people knew the type of crazy skills and vision and creativity that that he has. He just got to do it on a bigger stage. Yeah. You know, he's been in Memorial Cups.
Three in a row, right?
Yeah. Like, he's a pretty known quantity. I mean, I would think that Reinhardt was the guy that, you know, surprised me. I didn't realize how slick and how creative he is. His skating, I would say, is averagey, maybe a little better than average, but not much. But just in terms of throwing the puck around and dealing, he can be a really, like, if Buffalo is looking, and if Buffalo's in the hunt, and they get McDavid, and they have Reinhardt as a second center, oh my God.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, they say that Reinhardt is, he's got a quiet game, right? And I think that's because of what you said. He's not an explosive skater. He's the guy who's great with the puck, great in the offensive zone. But you're not seeing him flying up and down the middle of the ice, creating offense on the rush like that.
Future is really bright for a lot of these young men, and a lot of NHL teams are going to benefit from that Canadian gold this past Monday. Now, the Raptors have lost four in a row. Is a change needed either to the starting lineup or via a trade, or is the pending return of DeMar DeRozan enough? We'll explore that ahead on Sportsnet Magazine Live. Garrett Joyce and John Gregg, I'm Jeff Sammet on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
If it's a sports story you're talking about, you can guarantee they'll be talking about it. Unless it's something like arena football. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
And I'm Jeff Sammet with Features Editor of Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca, Mr. Garrett Joyce. And managing editor of Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca, Mr. John Gregg. Later on in this hour, we'll look at the National Football League playoffs. Now, maybe we'll make some picks so you don't have to watch the games. You'll know who will have won. We'll save you some time this weekend. And we'll look ahead to this hour where we'll talk about those that have been inducted into Cooperstown. No arguing them necessarily, but those that did not get in, of course, that's always a spirited debate. We'll discuss that later on in this hour. But guys, we talk about the Toronto Raptors right now. And you know, when they were out on the road, they were out west, and they finished up that road trip with a 3-game losing streak. I said, all right, they lost to some good teams there. They lost to Portland, lost to Golden State, Phoenix, but they lost some good teams there. All right. They're going to come home.
Heartbreaker to Portland.
Yes, that's a game they could have won. Oh. But I said, hey, it's Portland, okay? So, and they're on the road. They don't have DeRozan. Fine. They come home. They have a few days off. All right. They're going to take on the Charlotte Hornets. Now we're going to get back. I know DeMar DeRozan, but still, now we're going to be okay. And it didn't happen. They lost to the Charlotte Hornets.
No, and this was the stretch where you had to beat Charlotte, you got to beat Boston, you got to beat Detroit, because then you've got, and Philadelphia, because then you got Atlanta, the Red Hot Hawks coming in. So if you were, 4-5-0 or whatever, going to that Atlanta game, you're in a much better spot. But I mean, they're not looking confident at the moment. And granted, they lost to some good teams out west, and it's always a tough trip, but last night was a real stinker.
Yeah, well, and I think the Hornets are a bad matchup for them at the best of times. And this isn't the best of times. You know, when DeMar gets back, things change, I think. And he's needed back now.
Desperately.
If you had said when he went down, you know, that they'd have this run, what was it, 11-7, I think?
Yep, pretty much. Maybe 11-8 or 9 now.
Yeah. If you had been given that without him, I think the Raptors would have taken it.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. But you talk about must wins, and I hear you, and you're right about that. But in the losses they've suffered, and maybe a few more to come, maybe we'll see how things turn out. They're 24-11. They're third in the Eastern Conference. I think they've done themselves a huge favor by having the season they've had so far, by knowing that there's going to be an inevitable drop-off at some point in the season for whatever reason it's going to be. So they've built up enough cred and, enough wins, enough stature in the standings with which they could sustain a few losses here and there and a bit of a losing streak. So, yeah, got to win here and there. I get that, but this team is going to make the playoffs. This is a big preparation for the playoffs.
You know who's in sixth in the East right now? And if the playoffs started today, they'd have to go up against LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Can you imagine? It would be, you know, that's the scariest matchup outside of Chicago in the entire conference. And you can't afford to finish third or fourth. You got to be first or second so that you get a patsy in round one and you can make some forward movement in the terms of where your franchise is going, like into the second round of the playoffs for the first time in a long time.
I think Cleveland will figure it out and get up into the five or something like that.
So do I. I'm just saying five, you don't want to run into another Brooklyn, right?
Yeah. You know, in talking about Kyle Lowry, this guy's been a stud. I mean, he's an all-star in my eyes. I don't think there's any debate about that. But he has had to take on so much. I mean, and he's achieved so much. Eastern Conference Player of the Month for the month of December. But I think now we're starting to see signs of this guy needs DeMar DeRozan back. He's just attracting so much attention, and he's taking on so much weight with this ball club that I think he, as much as, if not more than anybody, needs DeMar DeRozan to come back.
Absolutely. I thought it looked like he was in need of a tune-up and oil change this week. Still playing great and great in big moments. But to have DeMar there is an option, just makes him that much more effective. And it does take the weight off his shoulders. DeMar coming back, and, you know, God knows. I mean, I think they're being cautious with it, and I think they're being appropriately cautious with DeMar's comeback. But I mean, yesterday would be fine by me.
Yeah, I mean, he's, and even, you know, by DeMar's standards, I mean, numbers for sure, he wasn't having the best year of his career when he went down. I mean, he's not averaging 20 points, but it's the way he takes the heat off everybody else by, you have to guard him. You know, he gets to the line and he draws fouls, and he is their number one option out there, right? And it just cascades down from the top.
When you say he wasn't having the best year, that's like sitting at a table and taking away one of the legs, saying it wasn't holding up that much. You know, like the leg was having a fine year, right? You know, it's part of the table, right? And I mean, you could make a case that it's DeMar's best year because the team is the best that he's
sure,
been with.
Yeah,
right?
I just mean, you know, statistically, guy. Though. I mean, when you look at his numbers, you know, instead of 22 a game, he's averaging like 19 a game, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not. But then again, he's got more people around him to take shots and score as well. So,
you know, he comes back, and, you know, although you think he takes the weight off Lowry offensively, I think he makes Lowry and others better on the defensive end because they're not running around and expending so much energy to score when they've got DeMar as an option.
Yep. And, you know, and
he makes them better at both ends of the court, just sort of indirectly on defense.
Yeah. And I think his defense in general, his one-on-one D play even is underrated. I mean, the numbers that the Raps are putting up in the defensive end were light years ahead of what they are right now. You know, in every facet, there's no comparison. They were top five, top 10 in every important number. And, you know, now they're bottom five, bottom 10 in all those numbers. And you know, when, like you say, Gary, with DeMar coming back, it just means you don't have to be as frantic. It's not as frenetic a game. You've got your gunslinger there who can also, you know, get in people's faces on the other end of the floor.
Well, and he slows things down by getting to the line with as much regularity as he did. And who would have thought that we'd ever talk about that with DeMar DeRozan, given how much cred that he had to build with the referees in the NBA. And I think he's gotten to that point. He's respected around the NBA now.
It's the Tim Raines syndrome, right?
He's going to get those. Well, we'll talk about that later on, later on in the hour. But he'll slow the game down in that he gets to the line and the defense is able to get set, you know, in getting behind him. So in slowing the game down, that certainly helps. DeMar DeRozan would certainly help in his return. Have we gotten to a point, though, guys, where the starting lineup needs to be shuffled? Where, and it's easy to substitute Landry Fields for James Johnson. maybe something more than that. Does Amir Johnson find his way onto the bench, out of the starting lineup? Do you replace a T. Ross? Well, at least I thought there was an opportunity to excel in playing to his more natural number two as opposed to a three, which he has to do with DeMar DeRozan in the lineup. I don't think T. Ross has really taken a ball and run with it, per se, at the number two. But is there somewhere where you look at shuffling the starting lineup and say that with a four-game losing streak, this is something the Raptors should do for tonight?
I think, you know, you get DeMar back. I mean, that changes your starting lineup right away, obviously. But you got to give the guys, you know, 10, 15 games with DeMar to see. You got to see what you have before you start making moves. I mean, if there's one spot, I would say you need some more depth down low. You need a guy who can provide 10 minutes of energy and crash the boards and maybe block some shots, just so that you're not leaning on Amir as much as you are. He's been in the league since he was 18. He's not an old man, but he's got a lot of...
That looks like there's more miles on there. It shows a bit more.
It's the way he plays the game too, right? Yeah. All out all the time. I mean, he's like, a power forward in the NHL who's always skating hard, always crashing and banging. Those guys always wear out first. They don't play till they're 36 years old. Tyler Hansbrough was supposed to be that guy, and he's been on and off all year, and Jonas is still kind of finding his way in this league. You could use some more bangers up front,
I think you have to wait it out.
Yeah,
and, you
for
know,
sure.
Like if you're saying we're getting DeMar back and then we're going to make some more changes, I think you actually need one. I mean, it's a return to what was before.
Yep.
You know, to shuffle the deck at
when you
this
were like
point.
19-2 or whatever, yeah. Right? So I mean, you go back, let them all play it out. Let's see what we got, and then. You know, go make some depth moves. But I mean, this is the core that you're going to the playoffs with. You're not going to go out and get a max player or anything like that
to add to the mix. I get all that in terms of contemplating making a deal or two, making a trade or two. But what about the starting lineup? What about like looking at tonight, DeMar DeRozan not in the lineup tonight versus the Boston Celtics? If that's the case, then what are you doing tonight? Are you going with the same group, the same starters that you got? Because you look at the last game. And they opened up the first quarter down 14-6. Raptors had to call the first timeout. And then after Lowry hit a technical after the first half to get a point there, the Hornets went on an 8-0 run. Dwayne Casey was not happy with his starters. Should he make a change to the starting lineup specifically for tonight?
I don't think that this is the time with DeMar's return imminent that you want to sap any confidence out of the guys that who've done yeoman's work keeping them afloat with your star's absence. I think you go with the same group or close to it. You know, there's some interchangeable parts there, and then you know react within the game or make in-game reactions to what the needs are. But I don't know that you want to start, you know, messing with everybody's head just before DeMar comes up.
Got to see the big picture,
yeah,
right? Like this team. You can't find a lot of fault with this team in terms of underachieving.
They've lost like 4 in a row, and we're talking about them underachieving. I mean, in any other Raptors year, four losses in a row is like, par for the course.
I don't
right?
think it's pushing the panic button in saying that they've lost 4 in a row and saying, all right, we're going to tweak the starting lineup tonight. I don't think that's a big deal. I mean, if at the very least you're putting in James Johnson, who's by far the most athletic player on this club and certainly very good defensively, and putting him in to the starting lineup in place of Landry Fields, maybe that's enough.
Sure. We're talking about James Johnson and Landry Fields, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Nothing against them necessarily.
But it sounds like you would be focusing on like a Terrence Ross sitting. That might do more harm than good in the long run.
Well, I mean, Terrence Ross is a young guy who's, played relatively well. He's shown obviously his athletic ability and he's made some strides this year. I don't think you want to, kind of put it all on him. That's not fair.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
Well, I don't think it's putting it all on one guy.
No, but if Landry Fields is in the starting five and Terrence Ross isn't, and Terrence Ross, for whatever reason, feels like he's being singled out, then even if you're not putting it on him, even if Dwayne Casey sits him down and says, hey, this is why we're doing it, you don't want to take a chance of having a young guy lose any confidence that he has.
You know, next hour, I'm going to be doing Sportsnet today, and one of my guests is going to be Christopher Walder of the Bleacher Report. And before this season started, he wrote a piece in saying, and it wasn't even the dominant part of the piece. He was just looking ahead at the season that was going to be with the Toronto Raptors. And he just threw out the notion of, what if the Raptors started shopping Amir Johnson to see what they could get for him? He's an expiring contract that we've talked about it, how he might be a younger guy, but he's taken his lumps in the NBA. So his body might be a little older than his actual age really is. But what of that notion? Have you guys arrived at that point with Amir Johnson? Because it feels like this week, because at the time, Christopher was just getting hammered by Raptor fans saying, how dare you? Why would you trade someone that means so much to this club that everybody just reveres, not only those that are on the club, but those watching the club and being a fan of the club. Loved the guy, loved Amir Johnson, didn't want him going anywhere. How could you even think of it? But, you know, an expiring contract and everything. And he thought, you know what, maybe you deal high with the guy and you get something for him. This week, it kind of feels, from some people, that, all right, I think I'd arrived at that because Amir Johnson hasn't played as well as I thought he would or hoped he would. Have you guys arrived at that?
Amir's my favorite on the team.
Yeah, he's the heartbeat of this team, or at least he was prior to kind of Lowry's ascension.
Yeah.
Right. You move him, you're doing two things. You're gutting the kind of culture,
heart and soul
of this team, and you're depleting yourself of depth up front. You know, you're not going to get a better guy for Amir up front. So that means that you're just getting worse at, you know, at least in my opinion, is your position of need.
You know, Masai is, you know, done an amazing job by doing less rather than more, right? And there's a lot to be said for continuity. He's made tweaks, you know, but outside of the you know, the one big, you know, home run that he hits with.
And that was addition by subtraction, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
gay trade.
You know what? He's watched a lot of pitches, you know, and he's advancing runners, taking bases on balls, right? Like he's to mix metaphors.
He's winning faceoffs.
Yeah, I mean he's done a lot by doing doing almost nothing.
Well, and even
achieved
the,
a lot
even,
by doing
even,
almost
even the
nothing.
Small moves have just been fantastic. I mean, you look at Lou Williams being brought in here, which seemed like a minor move at the time, and how important is this guy to this club?
Yeah, so. If you win the small ones, you know. Then big moves aren't so very necessary.
Mm-hmm. We see as well this week in Raptor news that ESPN picked up another pair of games, February 6th versus the Clippers, March 25th versus the Bulls. Times moved from 7:30 to 7. Does that say a lot about the Toronto Raptors and how they're faring and the popularity that they have down south? Or maybe, you know, a couple of games that were moved out, both involving the New York Knicks. So maybe it speaks more to how bad the Knicks are as opposed to how popular and successful the Toronto Raptors are.
I think it's both. I mean, I feel like the We the North campaign has created subtraction south of the border. And, you know, that Chicago game could very well be, you know, a battle for first place in the conference, right? I would think definitely people in the U.S. are becoming more and more aware of the Toronto Raptors on an almost daily basis, and ESPN could do worse than pick up those games.
I think it's purely a comment on the state of the Knicks, right? If you want to watch an unfolding natural disaster,
they won
tune
seven in
to,
a row?
Like flood coverage on CNN or the Weather Channel, something like that.
I think
right?
ESPN would opt to play tone as opposed to showing a Knicks game.
Yeah, I think that's horrible. It. I think that's it in its entirety. And you know, looking at options after that, I think they would look at the Raptors and say, you know, underappreciated, maybe a flavor we can launch here. And I don't know that it reflects on cachet that the Raptors have right now. I think what they're looking at is the idea that this team might be flavor of the month next month.
Hmm. Is there too much importance placed on the popularity of the Raptors down south by those here in Toronto?
There's too much put on so many things. That's just one of them, right?
Here in Toronto?
Yeah. I don't think that that's material at all. I don't think that that should matter.
I think there's an inferiority complex surrounding a lot of things for people north of the 49th, right? I, I don't think it matter. It should matter what the people south of the border think of the Toronto Raptors or anything else. But it is nice to see them standing up and taking notice of what is becoming a pretty good team.
Hmm. So what are you saying? They don't like us?
I'm saying they don't care. You know, no, they just don't care.
Yeah, it's like Torontonians' attitude towards the rest of Canada.
We don't care. You say
they hate us and we don't care, right? And that's what we get from the States.
Yes, exactly.
Except that, you know.
Except we do care that the States hates us because of our inferiority complex,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's not that they don't care enough to hate us.
Hey, we're number six biggest market in North America.
Yeah. Like us. Please, like us. We're one of you. We could be one of you.
We're like Chicago,
you know,
but bigger.
You talk about those, you know, in games that you know, are down south, but Americans witnessing the Raptors down south, we talk about them on television, but road games. Notice that there's a large Raptor contingent of fans, whether or not they're from Toronto or Canada or whatnot, but there are... it seems like a good following to varying degrees of Raptor fans in each and every city. And it's not lost on the Toronto Raptors or their head coach, Dwayne Casey, or what. They've taken notice of that.
Yeah, I think it's a scrappy team, the type that you can get behind. It's not based around one kind of dominant superstar or a duo or trio. It's the whole team. They have, once DeMar's back, I mean, they're the envy of the league in terms of depth. They've got a second unit that any team in the league would want. And the way Casey can mix and match players depending on opponent is great, and people can get behind the team like that.
If the Raptors are going into a market, into an arena where the last two games have been Philadelphia and the Knicks, the Raptors are going to look pretty good. They're going to be people that come out for that. You know, it's a reflection on the idea that this is a good team, right? It's And it's also, you know, a byproduct of there being so many bad teams.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they do play in the East where, I mean, it's just like the NHL where the teams are just horrendous. Well, you can't watch, like we said, New York. You can't watch Philadelphia. You know, they're just so uninspiring, right? I mean, unless you want to see Melo jack, you know, 25 shots a game, there's nothing to watch.
Well, there will be times where I'll just be at home and I'll be flipping through games to see what I want to watch. And if I'm doing that with basketball, I'll say, well, who are the Raptors playing next? Ah, okay, they're playing Charlotte. I'm going to see who Charlotte's playing. Charlotte's playing the Celtics. I'm like, oh, I cannot sit through this.
No.
I cannot watch this. You know, the Sixers are playing the Knicks. Oh, I am not sitting there and watching. I do not need to scout a team that badly. They stink. That's pretty much how it goes for the most part. Well, Celtics, speaking of, take on the Raptors tonight's 7 o'clock broadcast start here in Toronto on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, visuals provided on Sportsnet. The tip is at 7:30. It's another NFL playoff week, and the usual suspects are left standing to this point. What happened to the supposed parity in the league? And one and done for a former Blue Jay by Cooperstown voters, fair or foul? We'll get to all that on Sportsnet Magazine Live with Gare Joyce and John Grigg. I'm Jeff Sammet on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Dave Serum.
Are you tired of mundane athlete interviews? Fed up with the same old, same old? Let's be honest. Spend enough time in NBA locker rooms and you're bound to hear the same questions and answers over and over again. How'd you feel after that win or loss? What percentage did you give out there? There has to be a better way. Well, have we got something for you. That's right, folks. Introducing Free Association, the series that brings you exclusive interviews with some of the biggest stars from around the NBA. In Free Association, we throw out those old standard questions and pose the right cues for the best days. From insightful this or that Coke or Pepsi style questions that get right to an athlete's soul, like BLT or club sandwich, to the tough questions, like when's the last time you cried at a movie? Free Association is fast becoming the most interesting interview series on the planet. Isn't that right, Toronto Raptors center Lucas Bebe Nogueira?
I don't know. I really don't know. It's a crazy question, man.
So don't put up with that boring old-fashioned nonsense any longer. Just check out Free Association. Go online today and receive an additional interview free. That's right, free. Can you dig?
Fans can find this story and more on Sportsnet.ca. Canada's home for sports news, analysis, videos, and features.
It's 11:33, the Sportsnet Radio Network at Sportsnet Magazine Live. Gare Joyce, the features editor of Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca, with us in studio. John Grigg, managing editor of Sportsnet Magazine
good
and Sportsnet.
Good tunes today, guys, back there. Good tunes.
No, actually, it's me. I gave him my iPod, said, pick whatever you want. And here they are. I'm Jeff Sambit. No, it's all those guys. It's all those guys. Going to talk about Cooperstown, those getting inducted, hard to argue, but some of those that didn't, that's usually the more fun conversation. But that was one and done, a former Toronto Blue Jay. We'll talk about him in a few moments. But the NFL playoffs, guys, this weekend, the NFL playoffs, are you like me that anything else that's going on the weekend, it's not happening. I've got to sit down and watch football. I've got to do that. I plan my weekend around football. You guys get to do that?
I'm better there in the conference finals.
Yeah.
You know, I'll buy in on that. These are entertaining games. But I dial in for the conference finals.
I don't need to watch Seattle and Carolina.
That's the one. That's the only one. And that's the one, Gare, that you're anticipating.
I just can't see Carolina losing that game. joking.
No, I don't either.
Joking.
What are you, a big Seahawks fan?
Oh, I just see that as a walkover. I mean, that you almost hope they don't broadcast that one. That could just be.
It's that bad?
Yeah.
Don't even show it. It's going to be that bad.
There's only one way Carolina can win that game.
Monsoon.
It's on the ground, right? I mean, the Seahawks, you know, their D is ridiculous. But Carolina's been running the ball a lot, like for over 200 yards a game for the past like five games. They're on this winning streak,
at
right?
At least 100 rush yards in 12 consecutive games.
There you go. Yeah. And, you know, again, that's the only way they're going to win this game. I mean, and
it has all the suspense of a coronation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you sort of know where this is going.
Yeah.
Well, Seattle, their D is back, and that's what made them look like the Super Bowl champions they were last year. And you look at them ranked 19th in defensive scoring through the first 6 weeks, finished with a top-ranked defense for the second straight year. And I think that's remarkable, and that's what makes the Seattle Seahawks look more like they did last year in a Super Bowl victory. But I'm right there with you guys.
They're just badasses.
Yeah,
and they are.
You know, this game specifically, they're playing at home. I mean, you're down 10-0 as soon as you walk in the door. Right. Yeah. Like I think the spread is a touchdown or maybe it's 10 points. But I mean, that home field advantage is the best in the NFL.
Russell Wilson.
Other places you're going and hopping in the hot tub, here you're entering the mouth of the volcano.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It is not the place you want to play.
Russell Wilson is perfect versus the Panthers in three games.
He's the most underrated quarterback in the league as well.
I was just going to say more than that, 24-2, a career record at home, and that's regular season and playoffs.
He just does everything that you need done within the game. He doesn't do anything super flashy. I mean, he moves a lot. He creates time and space for himself and opportunities to run the ball, but he doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't give the ball away. When you need him in the big moments, he's able to step up. He just doesn't have the gaudy numbers of some of the other QBs around the league.
He's even better than he has to be for them to win.
Yep.
You know, that's the thing. You don't have to ask a lot of him, and he does more than you ask.
Having Marshawn Lynch really helps. I mean,
You're absolutely right.
But, having a star running back like that is certainly going to help you. I'm looking forward to mostly the Ravens and the Patriots because I think that if there's a road team that's going to go into New England and not be intimidated, it's the Baltimore Ravens. They've been good on the road, but especially in the playoffs, you look at them all time on the road, they're 10-5, but it's more than that. They've got experience. They've got playoff experience. These guys have been there and done that. And they weren't intimidated in Pittsburgh, and they're certainly not going to be intimidated in New England. Gare Joyce.
I would say that the Pats had a bad weekend last weekend. When they saw that outcome, I think that that's the only team out of the lot that they would really fear. Not just in the AFC. I don't think that they get too rattled by anyone, but the Ravens, you know, the Seahawks and the Ravens both are badass physical D's, and the Ravens have had success in New England before, and it's just a terrible matchup for the Pats.
I mean, the Pats are, I think it's 13-3 at Foxborough under Brady, and two of those three losses are to Baltimore. Yeah. Now, I will say, though, that this is not the badass Baltimore Ravens of years past. I mean, no Ed Reed, no Ray Lewis, the kind of the heartbeats of that defense. They are still physical and they are still scary, but, you know, I think that there's a lot to be said for a healthy Ron Gronkowski this time around. I think there's a lot to be said for the Pats secondary, which is better than it's been in a long time. And, you know, Joe Flacco is not going to create any magic if he's got nobody to throw to.
Do you think that with Gronkowski, you know, he'll be distracted by that erotic novel that they pulled off Amazon this week? The Gronk erotic novel.
Claude Giroux seems to not be distracted by his erotic novels, so yeah. I think Gronk will be fine.
Glad you guys mentioned Flacco, because some numbers that you look at, and Joe Flacco is just, he's a winner. He's a winner. And
best postseason start to a career. He's tied with Tom Brady at 10-4.
There you go. And in road wins, he's got 7, the most in NFL history. We're talking better than Eli Manning, Roger Staubach, Len Dawson, and the list goes on. But Flacco will become the first quarterback to start a postseason game in 6 of first 7 NFL seasons in the Super Bowl era. No INTs and 166 consecutive pass attempts in the postseason. 3-4 in 7 career games versus the Pats, which is not very good. But 7 TDs and 1 INT in his last 7 postseason games. On the big stage, Joe Flacco, more often than not, is going to get it done. John Gregg, do you think that he gets enough praise as far as the elite quarterbacks in the National Football
League? I don't think he's an elite quarterback. I think he plays in a good system. I think he's had, you know, as we were alluding to before, he's had great defenses around him. He's had the ability to run the ball. But to call him an elite quarterback is, I think, he's not Peyton Manning or Andrew Luck or Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady. I mean, nobody would say that. Is he at the
top? He might have a better arm than all of those guys.
He might, but he can't call a game like Manning. He can't create for himself like Rodgers. You know, he doesn't have what seems to be just that innate win ability of Brady.
Doesn't have a supermodel girlfriend.
Well, that's true. And a supermodel ex-wife.
Yeah.
Or ex-girlfriend. But, yeah. But I mean, I would put him right at the top of the second tier of guys, but to call him elite, I think, is going just a bit too far.
Well, let's talk about elite in Peyton Manning, and perhaps to a lesser extent, well, certainly lesser than Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck in the game of the weekend, as far as many are concerned, and certainly the NFL putting them on as the Sunday later game at 4:40, but the Colts and the Broncos in Luck versus Manning. And Manning beat his former team in week 1, 31-24. That was a home win. Now the third matchup against them. But one wonders how healthy the Broncos are. And I think they needed a week off more than anybody, and they got it, obviously. But they listed 22 players on the injury report going into their last game. They needed last week's bye more than anybody. But Denver, 13 takeaways and winning 5 of its final 6 games. The Colts, they better hang on to the ball. I mean, beating the Bengals is one thing, but the Broncos, Garrett Joyce, is a very different story.
I think on the schedule, the Broncos are listed as probable for this weekend. I love the Colts in that game. I do.
Yeah, I do too. And it's just such a delicious matchup, right? When you get the current best in the game against the heir apparent and the former teams and all that stuff. I mean, that's must watch TV. That's where I can sit down and say at 4:25 on Sunday, I'm watching football.
Mm. Yeah, that's the big one of the weekend. Slightly outdone, perhaps, but certainly looking forward to it and seeing the Cowboys and Packers tomorrow at the 1:05 game. Aaron Rodgers, the calf muscle, a slight tear in it, in addition to it being significantly strained. John, you think it even matters? He's going to be okay.
Listen,
he's going to be all right.
He got carted off the field against Detroit in the game that amounted to the division title. He came back and he was 11 for 14 for 129 yards and rushed for a touchdown while throwing for another. I mean, he's had 2 weeks to heal. He might not, even if he's not 100%, he's still going to be able to move around and to create time and space for himself and for his receivers. I got no worries about Aaron Rodgers.
He's like Arturo Gatti. right? Like, you have to knock him down, put him on the canvas, almost knock him out, and then cover up because he's going to come out and take you at that point. And that's when he's most dangerous.
You know, and let's not forget, I mean, Dallas is here because of a bad call, right? That's not all.
And this is coming from a Giants fan.
Come on.
The Lions put up three points in the second half of that game.
Yeah, but the momentum turned on that call that, you know, it was going in Detroit's way until that happened. And, you know, in my books, the Cowboys don't deserve to be here, and this is an easy one for the Packers.
You watch it for the weather.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, I'm old enough, I watched the original Ice Bowl, right? You're watching it for the weather. It's great to see teams play through that stuff for me.
And the one thing in Dallas's favor, obviously, we haven't mentioned it, but Green Bay, perfect at home. Dallas, perfect on the road. If the weather does become a huge factor, you know, there's probably no team with as physical a front five as the Cowboys. And if DeMarco Murray can pound the ball, if they can open up the holes and it doesn't become a shootout, then maybe they can control the clock and make things happen.
They've been waiting since 67 for payback.
So as a certain hockey team, you mentioned 67, I can't help it. DeMarco Murray, it heads up for him because after allowing 153.5 rushing yards per game in the first eight, the Packers, they moved their pass rusher in the former Clay Matthews inside and just given up 86.4 on the ground while winning seven of the final eight contests. So there's something to be said for moving Clay Matthews into the middle and how that's helped the Green Bay Packers rush defense.
And I think, too, what you're going to see is them going after the ball when Murray has it. Because, I mean, he's dangerous, but he leaves that ball out there. He's making his cuts, and it's not tucked in nice.
It's
going to be cold, yeah. And he does not have a great track record holding onto the ball, and that's what Green Bay is going to be trying to do, is get the ball out of his hands, like, fumble-wise.
We see the teams remaining at this point in the NFL playoffs. The Patriots, since the year 2000, been in the playoffs 12 times, including three Super Bowls. The Colts 12 times, one Super Bowl. The Packers 11 times a Super Bowl. The Ravens a couple of Super Bowls in 10 times. The Broncos 8 times, Seahawks 7, Panthers 6, Cowboys 5, just to speed things up a little bit. But these guys have been around. What happened to the parity in the National Football League? Do those numbers surprise you that we see those teams be in there as much? Because I feel like we've seen representation out of Pittsburgh and out of New York with the Giants. I feel that there's been representation elsewhere.
I feel like, well, there has been, but I think the parity comes at the bottom of the league, right? Where it's anybody's got a chance to make it pretty much any year unless you're the Jacksonville Jaguars or who have you. But, I mean, the top of the league is still, you know, driven by the best quarterbacks in the league, the best coaches in the league, and we're seeing that in that list that you just rhymed off there.
Yeah, I'm not so surprised. I think that there's, short of dynastic continuity, you know, there's elite continuity.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think that's a good thing. I think, you know, everyone going 9-7 and 10-6 and, you know, shuffling those teams around randomly, I don't think that would necessarily be very good for football.
Yeah, I mean, I've always, in all sports, been a fan of dynasties and of players, you know, making their way through the record books and whatnot. In my mind, it's nice to see other teams get in and get their shot and win every once in a while, but I want the dynasty. I want the 49ers from the 80s and 90s. I want those Cowboys teams. I want the Bulls under Jordan. That's me.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to keep track of every team. There has to be some teams that are more important than others.
Yep.
That you can follow more closely.
I like some Goliaths in any league so that you could slay them or just see them continue to dominate and revel in it. The NFL playoffs get going once again this weekend at 4:35. Baltimore is taking on New England in about a half hour. Rob Longley of the Toronto Sun is going to join me on Sportsnet today from New England. We'll talk about that game. Now, it's Sportsnet Magazine Live with Garrett Joyce and John Gregg. I'm Jeff Sam. But very quickly, guys, because time is the enemy this past week, which seems to have gotten buried by all the Leaf news here in Toronto, but to Cooperstown. Inductions for getting in. You don't see that happen very often in the form of John Smoltz, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, and Craig Biggio. Is there any arguing any of these guys getting in? Garrett Joyce.
I'm good with all of them. I thought maybe Biggio would wait another year, maybe, and someone else might get in there, but or maybe there would just be three going in. Johnson and Martinez, to me, are not just slam dunks. They bring down the backboard.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, for me, I mentioned his name earlier, but it's the Tim Raines waiting game, and time is starting to run out on him. I mean, he's moving up, but you know, I would put Tim Raines in before Craig Biggio. I don't know about you guys, but I don't.
I think you could make that case.
Yeah.
And then you'd be looking at three expos going in.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Well, at the time when Tim Raines was playing, you talked about leadoff hitters, and it was Ricky Henderson. I mean, I wouldn't say Ricky Henderson and everybody else, but certainly Ricky Henderson was the best at the time. There was Vince Coleman that was there, yep, that was in that conversation.
Well, those guys were stealing 130 bases a year,
yeah,
right? Along with Tim Raines.
Tim Raines was the second best, and I think when you could see somebody dominate in some area, in some way, as well as Tim Raines did, I mean, that should be enough to get him into a Hall of Fame. From a Blue Jays perspective, the one and done for Carlos Delgado, are you surprised, John Grigg, that Carlos Delgado only got that little consideration?
I'm surprised when you see what Fred McGriff got, which was, you know, about 10% more support than Carlos Delgado. I mean, I remember McGriff, but I don't think he was ever better than Delgado. I mean, maybe I'm just misremembering things here, but in my mind, Delgado, he leads the franchise in pretty much everything. He would never have been traded, and, you know, McGriff was, you know, a good young power hitter, but it was when he was moved out that this team became the juggernaut that it was in the early 90s.
Yeah, lack of longevity, I think, hurt Delgado's case. If he had been able to squeeze another couple more seasons, which you'd think that he would, but, you know, he was a very quick fade and injury factored in there. You know, that he would have built a better case. You know, that said, I mean, the phenomenon with McGriff outdrawing Raines is that you have voters, Hall of Fame voters, who carry selections over from one year to the next. The guys that voted for McGriff this year voted for McGriff before.
Right.
Right. And, you know, you're having new entries on the ballot and you know, certainly Delgado, a very nice player, was not the most compelling first-time entry, you know, first-time eligible.
No, but I mean, he was closer to top of the league in terms of his numbers for an extended period of time than McGriff was. I mean, he was yeah, an MVP candidate for a couple of years there, and, you know, knocking in 145 and all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying that he's a Hall of Famer. I was just really surprised by the complete, almost like the utter lack of support for him.
If he were a Met, if he were a Yankee, or, you know, if he were in a major American market.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like Curt Schilling, who jumped up by 10% this year. I mean, Curt Schilling's not a Hall of Famer. He was an effective pitcher. And he, you know, at his best when he was in Arizona with Randy Johnson, they were the top, you know, 1-2 combo in the league. But I mean, it just doesn't feel like he's in anywhere near any of the three pitchers who got in this year.
Yeah. Well, in terms of Delgado, who might not be feeling the love everywhere else, but he certainly does get it here in Toronto. Garrett Joyce and John Grigg, appreciate this, guys. Thanks for coming in for Sportsnet Magazine Live.
Our pleasure.
Always.
Or my pleasure. I won't speak for Garrett.
His pleasure.
Well, he seems happy too.
His pleasure.
I've got an hour of Sportsnet today ahead. Leafs with Mark Osborne, Raptors with the Bleacher Report's Christopher Walder, Ravens Pats talk with the Toronto Sun's Rob Longley while he's in New England, and an outstanding story from a former Angel, Royal, and Blue Jay. You won't want to miss what happened to Willie Mays Akins over the Christmas holiday. He'll tell you all about it. I'm Jeff Sammet, the Sportsnet Radio Network.